Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Good morning. You are listening to the Saturday Science Club on Soho Radio with me, Matilda Hay, and I want to ask you, when you hear the word festival, what do you think? For most of you, it's probably music and mud and drinking in the sun, and it's probably not science. Well, all that's about to change because joining me today this week is Will Hunter, Associate Curator of Einstein's Garden, which takes place at Green Man Festival every year. Hello, Will. How are you?
Hello, Matilda.
Obviously, this isn't Einstein's actual garden. You're not just like taking people to his house and showing them his flowers. Could you give us a little bit of an explanation about what Einstein's garden is?
Sure. So whenever I try and describe it, I always talk about, I don't know if you've been to Glastonbury or anything like that, and you think about Shangri-La or another bit to the festival that's just kind of a nice added extra. But we're kind of a bit higher than that. We curate a whole series of our own lineups. It's the official way of talking about it is... A mixture of science, art and play. So we have like theatre, we have stand-up, we have little like, workshops, just everything. And then obviously, you know, everything's kind of permeated with science and even our sort of like, we have science stores as well, stuff like that.
So exciting. I can't wait to hear more about it. And every year you have a theme. So just to announce that this year's theme is, a bit of a drum roll please.
The future.
Yes, so it's science, art and play related to the future. Stay tuned and we will be hearing a lot more about what they've got coming up in Einstein's Festival. But first, before we can get to that, we need to have our weekly brain teaser. I've tried to make it kind of festival themed. So it's a riddle. There are two fathers and two sons who go to a festival together and they all take their own one-man tent. But only three tents are pitched. How could this be? If you think you know the answer, you can tweet us at Soho Radio and we will be revealing the answer at the end of the show. Will's got a cheeky smile on his face. I'm wondering if he's heard this before or if he's just really confused. But on to the music. Will, you've chosen the music we're having today, so what would you like first?
Oh, sure, yeah. So I've gone with, I'm going to, you know, try and plug Green Man. and so one of the artists I'm most excited about this year are called Sylvan Esso and this is Coffee.
Rock me in your arms, I can't feel it, but get up, get down, get up, get down. Feel the temptation start, see the next one break. Get up, get down, get up, get down, get up. Cinnamon to sing with a pair of feet chain.
News. Yes, it's that part of the show where we do science news and we're trying to make it a little bit future related this week. So, Will, you've got a really exciting story all about the trip to Mars.
I do, yeah. So, about 8 months ago, six people were put in a big dome in the middle of Hawaii. And this was the hope to kind of create a simulated Mars. And the reason this is news is because they came out a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they
were in there for the whole, like, 8 months.
In there for the whole 8 months, living on solely renewable energy, running loads of science experiments. They were being tested to see, you know, if people could really live in isolation for 8 months in that, because it's such a long journey to and from Mars. They were trying to see whether people could actually live in those kind of confined spaces for that amount of time and not kill each other, basically.
How many of them were there?
There were six. Ooh. So, yeah, lots of different backgrounds, some engineers, like, all scientists, but running their own kind of experiments and doing lots of outreach and, yeah.
Wow. So what did they find? Was it a success? Were they able to, did they all go a bit crazy?
So I know about this because someone I work with, actually, it's one of her friends who was in it and she was captain of the mission.
Oh, gosh.
And so there's this amazing quote where I'll do the kind of PG version. But yeah, she sort of said, you know, it's just like normal life. Stuff happens and you just have to deal with it and get on with it and sort of like work past your differences. So I think, you know, it was like any, like, you know, when you've been on it's holiday like with someone for too long or
big like, brother with experiments.
Exactly. And not being watched. Yeah, so they're out. And my favorite part of the story is that to kind of simulate re-entry, they all went and did a skydive together.
Oh really?
At the end of it, so they all kind of emerged from this pod and then went up and did a skydive back to Earth. It was amazing.
That's really fun. So has the results from this experiment kind of given the green light of it? Does it look like it is a good idea to go to Mars in just the sense of the journey, and is it feasible with the food and the renewable energy and stuff?
I think it's kicked off ideas. I'm not sure that they're quite there yet. And you know, they have kind of realized that humans can live in isolation, but at the same time, I think if people, it was, you know, they still knew that they were on Earth. And
yeah, there's not that sort of, oh gosh, if there was a fire on the ship, we're all gonna die. Like, you know that you're in a pod and someone will come and save you.
Exactly. But also I think something else that's come out of it is that they were really testing renewable energies and seeing if people could live sustainably. And, you know, they had to monitor all their water usage, and it really made them all think about how much energy they were using when they weren't in the pod. So they were kind of, you know, that's influenced their life apparently in all the kind of interviews they've been giving afterwards. And they created some new compost fuel cells, and they were just testing out all these new ways of making energy or conserving energy, or, you know, so it's kind of an influence that sustainable living edge of,
yeah, oh, that's so cool. Almost like everyone should get to go in a pod for a month to appreciate really the energy we have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, amazing. Well, a bit of news that I saw, it's more of a thought piece than news, but it was a very recently published thought piece, was thinking about kind of the future of robots and machines and the rise of automated industry. And is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is it just going to happen anyway and there's nothing we can do about it? And they kind of looked at it in the context of long-haul driving in America, which is now the most popular job in 29 states. And they said, well, it's not really because everyone loves driving lorries everywhere, but it's because it's still a job where you need to have an intelligent being doing it. You can't have a machine at the moment. And there is a lot of demand for these drivers. It's a big industry. But Google, Uber and Tesla all sort of putting a lot of money and research into self-driving cars, and the long haul industry is one where they, you know, that's a huge market. I mean, if you didn't have to have people having long breaks, or you didn't have the danger of them getting tired, it becomes much safer and much more efficient. Apparently 4,000 lives are lost every year in the US alone from truck crashes. But if you did get rid of all the long haul drivers, you'd have like up to 3.5 million people losing their jobs. And that, I think, is the sort of trade-off that you have when you think about these automated machines coming in. I don't know, do you have any sort of opinions on...
I have lots of opinions on this. I think the main issue... Well, no, I think... I personally wouldn't be too bothered if I had to lose my job. But as long as I could support myself, I think the only problem with automation, I think most people will welcome it in terms of it being more efficient and safer, but we kind of need to revolutionise the way that we think about living, because our whole economy is based on us earning money and then putting money back into the system. So if everyone's losing their jobs, but I think if we could find a way of making it so no one worked, and also making it so
That's really thinking outside the box. Exactly. That's a whole new YouTube.
But I think that's what we've got to start thinking about, because otherwise it's just gonna, I think it's, you know, it's gonna be crazy. And there will be, you know, I don't know, did you watch Humans?
I don't, but someone at work has told me all about it. Yes.
So there's this big, almost like a BNP or EDL group, but so for the synths.
just for anyone who hasn't watched Humans, it's a Channel 4 drama where robots are becoming, well, you probably know more than me.
So where everyone has their kind of own personal, I want to say servant, it's not servant, but they have, people can go out there and buy a synth, which is a robot, and it's almost, but it's a humanoid robot, extremely human-like. And yeah, there's kind of this uprising of people who don't want robots in their houses, basically.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was another point that this piece made. They said, well, even if we could have, you know, robots bringing us our food in a restaurant, maybe people just don't want that, and people wouldn't go to those restaurants because they want to have that human contact. And you've already seen a bit of that in the rise of kind of artisanal products like being really popular. So people want to have something a bit unique that's, you know, handcrafted furniture, not made from a factory, that sort of thing. So they did say, like, well, just because there are these robots, it doesn't mean there'll be the demand for them. And again, that's something else that you're kind of looking at in Green Man, isn't it? You've got this comedy thing, My Other Future,
yeah,
where they pitch kind of scientists and comedians arguing about these different thoughts of what might happen in the future and trying to pitch whether we should have robots or not, or whether we should be going to Mars or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's being organised by Nesta, and they...
Yeah, 'cause they do a big future festival every year.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So it was sort of... they did it there, we saw it, and we thought we want something like this in the garden. And so we've worked with Josh and Steve Cross, who runs Science Show Off as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're kind of going to... There's a really nice kind of lineup, a really nice mixture of scientists from different universities, science communicators, and then we've got some comedians coming in as well. Yeah, so it's going to be really good, really exciting, I think. I'm really looking forward to it.
I just love all those kind of topics because you don't have an answer yet, but it's crazy trying to project and think about what might happen.
I think it's going to be a great topic for discussion. I think it's going to produce some really funny conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, well, my only other bit of news is a bit silly, and it's a little bit old news, but I couldn't resist because it's all about mud. And obviously, we all know that mud is the staple of every festival. Basically, it's about this new satellite that NASA have launched called SMAP. And it's so that's Soil Moisture Active Passive. That's what it stands for. And its job is to map all the water contained in the soil. So we know all about the water in our rivers and our lakes and our oceans, but actually we forget how much moisture is held in the ground, and different soils can hold different amounts of moisture. And it also has a huge effect on what can you grow there, what's the flood risk, all of that sort of thing. So if we can map the moisture content, and it can also tell if it's frozen or liquid, amazing, then we could be able to say, like, yeah, that's not going to produce very many crops this year, or yes, get your flood barriers up. It was actually launched in January the 31st, so a little bit older news, but amazing to think that probably on this satellite's projections, Glastonbury's going to be a real hotspot.
So it's got, is it called SMAP?
SMAP,
a great name as well.
Yes, map that. So I thought that was quite exciting. Yeah. Let's have some more music. What do you want next?
Well, like summer wise, and this has been kind of a tune of the summer, where I want to play Jamie XX and Obs.
Beautiful, so summery. That was Obs by Jamie XX.
Oh, it just, yeah, makes me feel like festivals. There's still pans at the beginning, just thinking, like, got a little beer in my hand.
Yeah, they've got
sun
it going.
Setting.
Every time, steel pans just make me think of summer. Beautiful. So if you've just joined us, you're listening to Soho Radio, and today we have Will Hunter with us, who is the Associate Curator of Einstein's Garden, and he's going to tell us much more about it. So Will, how did Einstein's Garden first start?
It was the manager of it, who's Ellen Dow. She kind of had this idea, I think, and she'd been working with some people at Green Man anyway, and they kind of came up with this idea, and they thought, right, let's try and get science into this somehow. And since then, it's just been growing and growing and growing. And this year, we're actually kind of taking the garden outside of the garden.
Oh, wow.
So Einstein's Garden is now growing, as they're liking to call it. And so we're doing lots of different projects. We've got one on at Kew at the moment. They're called, we're in collaboration with their Spice Festival. So it's called Strictly Spice.
Amazing.
Yeah, so
what does that involve?
So you can learn things like the black pepper bangra.
Oh, so it's like Strictly Come Dancing dances, but with spice names.
Exactly.
Spicing it up.
Yeah. So, so that's kind of like symbolised, you know, we kind of started as a small little thing within a festival, and it's just been growing, growing, growing over the last few years. So this is its seventh year. We just keep going from strength to strength.
That's amazing. And so how do you come up with your themes?
So I think we just tap into, you know, the big... we look at kind of science and where it's kind of going, and the big themes. And so this year, the future, because we've just been discussing, you know, we've got things like it just gives a lot of opportunity to kind of discuss other stuff. So or be a nice wide, broad topic for us to tap into. So this year we've got loads of different stuff about future. So we've got things like the future of food. We're hosting a big bug banquet.
Oh yeah, because insects are the future of food.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite things. I've probably talked to many people about it before, but yeah, like it's to do with the fact that it takes so much water and land to sort of, you know, grow a cow or a chicken or a pig, and like barely any space and water to grow insects, and yet they're such a fantastic source of protein.
Exactly.
And you can farm them really easily, and it is going to be the future of food. You could grind up a bunch of locusts and make a burger patty, and that's what you'll be eating.
Or just like sprinkle it on top of your eggs in the morning.
So what will you be serving up at the bug banquet?
So we've got like biscotti. So we're working with a chef who operates out of Oxford at the moment, but so they've come up with a full menu. There's gonna be lots of little kind of like cakey treats, all made with mealworm flour, and I think how much it was, about 4 kilograms of grasshoppers they were saying they had delivered the other day. So it's kind of like, that's amazing. So they're just kind of in the process of grinding them all up and
jamming.
Yeah, making exactly. So making stuff that we can kind of, I think that's one of the problems, is that, you know, you can't, we're in a garden, so we have to host a picnic, and we have nowhere to kind of prepare all this stuff, so we just have to kind of roll with it and create loads of nice tasty treats and that kind of stuff.
Well, luckily you can get dried insects, so
exactly.
They last for a long time.
Exactly.
Another reason why they're such a good food source. Have you ever eaten any insects?
I've had some mealworm, yeah, some dried mealworm.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm hoping that, you know, come next, the weekend after next.
You'll have tried all of the
all
bug
of
treats.
The bugs ever, yeah, exactly.
I once tried also a deep fried locust, no, cricket, which was fine and just tasted kind of crunchy and salty. And then also a deep fried cockroach, which was horrible. I don't know, just because it was that bit meatier, like it's got this kind of like abdomen, and you sort of couldn't eat it all in one go, and there was just this really like weird browny gunk inside it, which like just didn't taste very nice.
There won't be any of that at the bug banquet.
No cockroaches.
But yeah, I've had a mini scorpion as well. That was interesting. I forgot about that one.
That
one's really crunchy, the kind of stuff that leaves like husks in your teeth, that kind of horribleness. But yeah, hopefully there won't be.
Nice. Well, if it's all ground up into cakes, then no one will know anyway.
Exactly.
So get rid of those husks. And so other than the bug banquet, what are you most looking forward to?
Oh, there's so much stuff. So as I was saying, you know, because the future gives us so much opportunity to look at other stuff. So we mentioned Maya the Future earlier, so that's going to be quite cool. We've got a live recording of Level Up Human, which is Simon Watt's new podcast.
Oh, wow. What's that about?
So basically looking at human enhancement and all the different things that we can do to enhance ourselves. And looking at it, so Simon's an evolutionary biologist, and so he does the ugly...
the Ugly Animal Preservation Society.
So he looks at kind of how they've all evolved, but then looking at how we can evolve, and, you know, whether we're better or worse than animals, or what we're gonna, you know, can we speed it up. And I went to one of his recordings a while back, and we were talking about like all these different evolutionary aspects that different animals have, and, you know, what would we choose if, you know, as a human we could like personalize ourselves and evolve.
So would you give yourself like tentacles to have loads of extra hands?
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, massive eyes so I could see in the dark and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, what would you pick?
Ooh, that's a really good, I still can't answer it. There's so, oh well,
I think you've got me going with the vision. I'd love to have like, if you could just sort of see for miles, that'd be incredible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously flying, that's one. I'd have a big pair of wings.
Or actually an amazing like sense of sound. So
yeah,
you could hear things like bats or something, and just hear and just know your surroundings and pick up on like the minute. You probably use it all the time just to like eavesdrop on people.
But then also the
world-class spy.
Yeah, exactly. But then also you get that problem of hearing people eat and all that sort of stuff. It's just going to be louder than normal. And like, heavy breathers really annoy me, so I could hear that. Maybe having smaller, like a lower ability of hearing would be better for me.
Or just like that you could turn on and turn off whenever you wanted to. Like, now I'm turning on my bat hearing, and now I'm turning it back off because that person is breathing really noisily.
Yeah. Just release an enzyme.
I have always found the idea of human enhancement fascinating. I think it's one of those topics where, I know for me, I have this kind of instant reaction of, that's wrong. We shouldn't be messing with ourselves. We shouldn't be trying to like change natural things. But actually, I remember going to this exhibition at the Wellcome Trust called All About Human Enhancement. And if you think about it, like glasses or laser eye surgery or hearing aid, that's all forms of enhancement as well.
Yeah.
Dental care, like all of these things, we are, you know, improving what we've already got, or things that we feel are not good enough compared to everybody else.
Well, even just modern medicine,
Yeah, like,
you know, we're not putting stuff off, but you know, we're treating ourselves with stuff that we've discovered and made, what is man-made rather than.
And there's this guy called Andy Meir who wrote a huge book about the Olympics, kind of talking about human enhancement. And if you think about the tracks that we run on and the shoes that we use now, they are hugely enhanced, amazing mm-hmm. pieces of technology. So he kind of argues, why are we so scared to try and enhance our bodies in the same way and really push and see where the human limits are? And again, sort of, I read it and I think, oh no, but actually I can't think of anything against his argument. Like, if someone wanted to, then why shouldn't they explore? And there's that amazing scientist who put like chips in his body that links up to, like, he could open doors with a click of his fingers or something, because he'd sort of wired himself up to this circuit. So yeah, lots of kind of fascinating.
But something else we've got in the garden is the Miu gloves. And it kind of works, there's like a series of sensors that works on your movement, and you can kind of turn your body into an instrument.
Yes, no, I read about these. So they're the brainchild of Imogen Heap.
Yeah.
And although she's not actually there, disappointingly, but developing workers are. And yeah, so it's like literally, if you put on these gloves, right, mm-hmm. and the way that you move them plays music.
Yeah, so it's almost, I can never remember what the name of that instrument is, but you know when there's the pole and it kind of makes the weird like woo noise.
Yeah,
like, and you move your hand around. It's kind of, I think it works on the same basis as that. But you're just kind of turning your body into an instrument.
Well, with integrative technology now, you know, when you go to like a big stadium and often mm-hmm. they give people lights at their seats which they can control. Imagine if they gave everyone a glove and it was like, if you put your hand in the air, it plays this note, and if you put your hand to the left, it plays this note, and you could get the crowd harmonizing. Such potential.
Imagine what a Mexican wave would sound like.
Oh, God. Amazing.
That'd be so good.
We should suggest it.
So we've got Chagall and he's going to be sort of performing, and it's going to be good. I'm really looking forward to that.
Another one that really intrigued me that I read about was, you've got a human library. Now, tell me, what is that?
So a human library is essentially a library, but with humans. So we're going to, well, if I had all the money in the world, and I would build a big bookcase for people to sit on. But anyway, so a human library is, it's a kind of means of simulating conversations around slightly more stigmatized topics or groups of humans. And so each human acts as a book, and you can check out that book and you can have a really short conversation with them. It's about kind of stimulating that dialogue between someone who might be I almost said bigoted, but that's not the word I mean. But anyway, it's just a way of kind of having this conversation that people might not usually get to have. So we've tried to kind of curate a lineup of scientists to work with topics that, as we just said, you know, things like human enhancement, a lot of people say, oh no, that's wrong, we shouldn't be doing that. But you know, sometimes just kind of talking it through and thinking about all the different
options, exploring
it
from all the angles, yeah,
and talking to someone who is actually sort of working with that every day and kind of does know a bit more about it, or could give you a bit more information if you, you know, wanted to know.
So you get the whole picture.
Exactly.
And then you can make a much more informed decision. Oh, that's
exactly.
Really cool.
So, yeah.
Can you give an example of a sort of topic you've got?
So we've got someone from the Society of Endocrinology coming in talking about hormone suppressants for transgender children. So people in the humans in the early stages of making that decision as to, you know, they might not have been assigned the right gender at birth, and feel like, you know, a boy might feel like he's not a boy and wants to make the transition, but it's about, there's still, I think, some legislation that kind of says, you know, they're not old enough to make that decision.
Yeah.
So it's about kind of slowing up that process. And so apparently I was talking to the guy from the Society of Endocrinology, that's a big thing for them at the moment, because they can produce these hormone suppressants, and it's about whether they should be doing that,
yeah,
or they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, and whose decision that is.
Exactly. So.
Is it the parents, is it the doctors? Because there was a really interesting piece in BuzzFeed last week, actually, by Azeen Gurushi, saying, like, yeah, who gets to decide when a doctor sort of just chooses which way that transgender child goes? Is that right for them to choose that? Because I think there's a case where, for the first time, one of the doctors is being sued because the child feels that the wrong decision was made.
Yeah. Well, so comes to the human library. I'm sure that's one of their examples they'll be using. But yeah, that's why I find it such an interesting topic, because there's so much going on there, and it is that kind of who makes this decision, and it's something I still feel like I really need to know a bit more about. So I'm definitely going to be checking that book out if I get any time. Who else is coming? We've got the guy, so we do some wildlife walks as well, and the guy from there works in conservation, and he's going to be discussing whether we should species like the panda, who haven't necessarily been massively affected by human, so things that are on the point of extinction, you know, there are ones that we've basically ruined their
habitat,
yeah, their habitat and their environment,
or hunted,
exactly. And then there's other stuff that hasn't really kind of evolved, but has this kind of like sexy appeal because they're a panda and everyone loves the pandas. And
yeah, cute. And they had babies in Edinburgh Zoo recently.
Exactly, yeah. So, but it's, you know, I think what he wants to sort of start discussing is, you know, it's a huge drain when you could, on conservation efforts that you could be putting into other types of stuff. Like, you know, do we just kind of make that decision to
that the pandas
let them
not worth saving compared to maybe another species that's more important for the ecosystem?
Exactly. And how do we make that decision? And also, is it just us projecting human, like projecting our
anthropomorphism
human,
onto
exactly,
it and saying, yeah, oh, they look really cute and we want to protect them?
Yeah.
That is a huge question. I don't even know what I think about that. Wow. If I came, that's the book I'd be checking out.
Exactly.
Right, should we have another song?
Yes, sure. So last year, at Green Man, and they're also playing again this year, the Two Bears came along and they bought the Sink the Pink guys. And they had all these drag queens up on stage, like dancing around. And it was one of the best things that I saw last year. So, yeah, let's play Not This Time. And I was only trying to
thank you. That was the Two Bears with Not This Time. So at the start of the show, we had a little riddle, which was kind of festival related. And it was that two fathers and two sons went to a festival, and each of them took their own one-man tent, but only three tents were pitched. How could that be? And my clue to you is you want to think about family relations. That's quite a big clue. So I expect you all to be tweeting in the answer at Soho Radio.
I've got it already, so
yeah,
even try.
He did it in about 10 minutes, so pretty good.
Very surprising for me because I'm usually rubbish at riddles.
And I didn't even have to give him the clue. Amazing. And it's now time for our weekly experiment. Now, in true, what's the word, tribute to Einstein, I thought we should, and also because it's kind of a future thing, do a thought experiment. So all you need this week is your brain and some ears to listen to the thought experiment. So Einstein, as most people know, one of the most famous scientists in the world, I guess that's why you've called the garden after him. yeah, he was a physicist that came up with the special theory of relativity. And in his autobiography, he says this thought experiment he had when he was 16 kind of started the germ of what 10 years later led to that special theory. So I think we need some Einstein thought experiment music. Now, this genuinely is called Einstein Music from the album of Einstein Study Music Academy. There we go. Setting the scene.
Quite spooky.
Yeah, I don't know. It's meant to make you concentrate.
Okay.
But picture young 16-year-old Einstein. And he's having a little thought about light. And if light is a wave, so light is how we see things. It gets reflected off objects back into our eyes. It's got to travel to the object and back to our eyes. That's how we see things. And if it's traveling like a wave, and if you could move at the same speed as that wave, you would only ever see one part of it. Like a surfer only ever travels on the crest of one wave into the shore. None of the others overtake. Then how would you be able to see anything? Nothing would be moving. From the light wouldn't be able to reach your eye because you're traveling at the same speed as it. And this whole concept kind of sparked the idea that your experience of the world would change relative to where you are or relative to the speed you're moving. And this is what 10 years later led him to come up with the idea of special relativity, which is all about time and gravity being related to sort of where you are. And the twins paradox, which was another thought experiment of his, which is that if you had two twins and one of them went into space and one of them stayed on Earth, because time is relative to gravity and out in space you experience less gravity, time in space moves more slowly than time on Earth. Therefore, if one twin was away for a year, the twin on Earth would have aged a year, because that's how we measure time. But the twin in space would come back younger than his brother.
Didn't they do that? They've actually run that experiment with two astronauts.
I didn't know they actually twins. Did it. Yeah. I knew that they'd proved it and it worked, and that's how our GPS and stuff works.
There's a thing about it in the Cravings exhibition at Science Museum. Sorry. I should probably know that. They sent two astronauts up. One stayed on Earth, the other one out, their brothers, and they were known as being like the twin astronauts. And the other one lived on like a diet of space food, and the other one had a normal diet, and yeah, they wanted to run. They wanted to look at the twin experiment, basically.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, the effect is, even if you were to work, say, at the top of the Empire States Building versus the bottom, you over years would be, you know, seconds younger than someone working on the first floor. It's incredible. Yeah, interesting thought experiment.
Mind blowing.
I really like thought experiments. Actually, there was a couple of others I came across. Also kind of related to future and automation, like we were talking about earlier. Alan Turing came up with the test that if a machine could convince you that you were communicating with another human, it passed what he called like the intelligence test and was basically artificial intelligence. And the thought experiment that counters this is called the Chinese room. And that says, imagine you've got a man locked in a room with loads and loads of Chinese characters, but he doesn't understand any of them. However, he does have a book which gives him the instructions and tells him how to use them and what they mean. And then you've got someone outside the room passing him like Chinese sentences under the door. Now, using the book, he can decode the sentences and then he can work out what he wants to say and then find the correct characters to send the answer. The person outside the door believes they're communicating with a fluently Chinese person, but he cannot speak Chinese and he doesn't really understand those characters without his book, without his programming. So that was the thought experiment that counters the intelligent test.
I still really don't understand thought experiments. I just gave up on any kind of theoretical physics.
Well, this one is more psychological. So this is Wittgenstein thinking about language, and he said, imagine everyone in the world had a box with a beetle inside. Something that we call a beetle. You know what your one looks like, your beetle in your box, but you've never seen anyone else's beetle. And people can describe their beetles to each other, but because they've never seen each other's, they've got nothing to compare it with. And ultimately, the word beetle just means that thing in someone's box. You don't know what all beetles are. And he said, this is a really good analogy for the mind. Everyone has a mind in their head, but you can never see into anyone else's. And you can never know exactly what their mind is like and what they're experiencing and thinking and stuff. So kind of spooky.
What a lovely way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah. Get your beetle working this morning. Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any other thought experiments that you particularly have enjoyed, please tweet us in what they are and we'll be reading them out later in the show. Right, another song.
Ooh. I haven't mentioned any of the headliners yet for Green Man, and I'm not really here promoting Green Man, am I? I'm here promoting Einstein's Garden. But
we should say the dates of Green Man. Though.
Yeah,
when
sorry.
Is Green
so,
Man?
It is next weekend. It's the 20th to the 23rd of August.
The Brecon Beacons in Wales.
Yes, exactly.
I believe it is sold out, but if you're excited, then you should get your tickets for next year.
Yeah, there's that, or you can come to any of the other Ironside Garden events.
Absolutely.
The Q one's running for another month, so
Is it on at the moment?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, so. Get yourself down for some spicy dancing.
Strictly Spice. Headliner, St. Vincent. They're quite good headliners, actually. The Super Furry Animals, Hot Chip, and St. Vincent. And I'm most excited about St. Vincent, so let's play Rattlesnake by her.
Was Rattlesnake by St. Vincent. I realised I never said my two favourite facts about Einstein. One was that he actually genuinely had the title of Professor Extraordinary when he was working at Zurich in 1909. And the other, which I never knew, was that after World War II, he was offered the presidency for the State of Israel because he'd been sort of so involved in world government issues. And he actually turned it down. Carry on with physics.
Well, he's got too much. He's got loads of physics on his plate, doesn't he?
Exactly. He doesn't need to be running a country as well. Far too hard. So, Will, we've only got another 10 minutes of the show.
No way.
I know, it's gone so fast. But I want to find out more about you and what got you into events.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
What got me into
it
events?
It sounds like such a fascinating job. I mean, just, you know, getting to kind of curate these amazing science installations and comedy and just really interesting ways of getting people talking and thinking about science that they might not be doing otherwise.
Yeah. So, I guess I was just like, when I was at uni, I was doing geology and I, you know, was like to think of myself as a bit of an activist and wasn't, I didn't want to work for an oil company or in like any kind of resource company. So, I was like, oh, how can I do what I do anyway? Because I was, you know, going to the theatre a lot and like doing lots of things and going to lots of events. And I thought, well, I could probably put on some events. And how do I do that? But also like making sure that my degree is actually being used.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just decided that I was going to try it. And yeah, and then I started like looking into it. And, you know, there are all these groups like Guerrilla Science and, you know, loads of stuff was coming out of the Wellcome Trust. And I saw actually sort of targeted Einstein's Garden as well. And saw it and just thought, these are great. Like, why aren't we just producing events that are like all the other events, but just have a science theme? Like, what is it about science that people don't want that being
yeah,
in their events?
Because so many people do sort of, particularly at school, it's like, I like art or I like English and I don't like science. It's always seen as very distinct things that you can't mix them.
Well, that's so we try and break that down in Einstein's Garden. So as I said earlier, it's kind of this mixture of science, art, play, and yeah, we just kind of want to really put things into this strange, we want to just make people experience science in very novel ways and ways that they wouldn't normally expect it. So it just kind of like, you know, it, as I said earlier, it's Einstein's Garden is one of those things that quite a few people just stumble across,
yeah,
but they're like, oh, this is amazing, and then they end up spending like a huge amount of time there and, you know, like spend most of their day there. So and then we're competing with these massive acts. I was just talking about the headliners and, you know, but we get lots of people kind of coming around and having loads of great fun. And yeah, so.
And how do you choose what to include?
So it's a tough one, actually. So we kind of, as I was saying earlier, so part of my role is really diverse. You kind of, I program this tent called the Omni Tent, which is a mixture of kind of stand-up theatre. And you just kind of like, you look out for stuff that you've liked or things that you've seen. It's nice to kind of like look at other, like what other festivals have been doing as well and kind of see if you can kind of work with that person or even, so with the Bug Banquet, I've always wanted to do something kind of foodie, and I wanted to kind of set up this thing called the Scientist Supper Club. But we thought, well,
oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like this opportunity to sit down to dinner with a scientist and like talk about to them about their work, and but not in a way that it's just everyone's focusing questions on them. It becomes this kind of round the table discussion, and yeah, people can pitch in. So I kind of wanted to do something like that, but. And because of the theme of the future, I was thinking future food, right? Well, we can't like host a dinner party because what are we going to do about preparing the food? And I was like, oh, right, let's have a picnic. And then it became like, right, future food, insects, right, let's have a bug banquet. So
it's kind of having an idea and then defining it
exactly
in the constraints of your logistics.
Absolutely. And so the way we always work is that we, you know, everyone has their expertise, so we'll find the scientists, but then also, you know, I'm not an expert in cooking, so we'll find a chef as well, and then we'll kind of bring them together, and it's this kind of role of the creative producer, I suppose, that you, yeah, you're bringing all these
sort of
people together.
Make these incredible
exactly
partnerships.
Yeah, and then that kind of goes on. And what's really nice about Einstein's Garden as well is that, like, kind of rolls over outside of it as well, and, you know, a lot of these people stay in contact, or they'll do lots of different things. We're also quite handily kind of work with different universities as well and work quite closely with them to curate some of the more so we've got this year we'll have like the dialogue pods, and that's coming out of something that with Cancer Research UK and I think some scientists from UCL, and so they're going to be kind of in these pods and people can come and have discussions with them about their research and other kind of yeah.
And the other thing that I find amazing is you don't even work on this full time, and you're able to put this on because you also work at the Science Museum, don't you?
I do, yes. So
what do you do there?
Essentially the same job. But no, so I work in their contemporary science team, which is sort of why I was talking about Mars earlier and things like that. So we find out, we try and put current news, science news stories into the public eye, but in a museum setting. So we make exhibitions, like quite quick exhibitions We do events. Something I'm actually kind of now working on, the maths festival.
A maths festival?
Exactly, for November.
Do you make maths a museum-friendly? It's so conceptual.
Exactly. So what we're going for is, a lot of the stuff that was born out of the discussions with the scientists was that it's a toolkit for making sense of the chaos in the world. So we want to build this kind of...
I like that phrase.
And, you know, it's bringing... What was it? Creating patterns out of with a simple set of rules. So we're just going to kind of work on this idea of pattern and logic and toolkits. And
please, can you include the Mean Girls quote? Maths is beautiful because it's the same in every language.
Oh my God! Yes,
you have to. It's so great.
I think that's going to be like the banner as everybody walks into
first. Yeah.
Maths is beautiful. Oh my God! I'm going to put that as a quote above my computer. And I'm the biggest Mean Girls fan as well, so I can't believe I've completely overlooked that. Anyway,
clearly not as big as me.
Obviously, yeah. So yeah, but that's yeah. So it's this idea, especially with Einstein's Garden, it's this idea of kind of respecting people's expertise and, you know, bringing them all together and getting, you know, the scientific content and seeing where we can run with those ideas and, you know, finding that hook and, you know, trying to get them to sum up the science in one word or one sentence, and then you just kind of go with it and kind of get the ideas of the creative producers as well.
That's really cool. Yeah, so like talking to the scientists, distilling it out, and then turning it into something for the public.
Exactly. So then you make sure that you still keep that kind of scientific integrity as well, because I think that's something really important as well.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people think that, well, it could be quite easy to kind of have this idea or this concept and then try and make it fit into some kind of creative output. But actually, I think you need to kind of make the creative output fit.
The science concept.
So if it's not right, it's not right, and you just don't sort of go with it. But yeah, so keeping that integrity, that scientific fact.
I've come to the end of our show.
Sad.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Well, absolutely fascinating. I am so jealous that I'm not going to be in Einstein's Garden.
Keep an eye out on there. So we should have some stuff born out of the garden, and we'll, things like the queue we'll be putting on in different spaces. So yeah. Keep an eye out.
The gardeners are going to be travelling.
Yeah.
And all that we have time for now is to reveal the answer to our riddle.
Yeah.
So if you didn't hear it before, it was that two fathers and two sons went to a festival. Each took a one-man tent, but only three tents were pitched. And my clue to you was, think of family relations. Now, Will has actually solved this, so I'm going to give him the honour of telling you the answer. What is it, Will?
It's a grandfather, a father, and a son. So there are two sons, there are two fathers, but there are only three guys.
Absolutely. And our final song to play out with?
I'm going to go with Robin Dancing on My Own, because this always gets me going.
One of my favourite songs too. Thank you and goodbye. Yeah, I know it.